Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday evening in the United States. I am AP Taylor, and I'm not from the United States. You can probably tell. I'm Australian, and some might call me English, but I'm Australian. And I'm hosting tonight down from the wonderful world of Melbourne, Australia, and I'm just bringing everybody in. I've got a little bit of background noise, unfortunately, but we'll just see if that's me. That was the theme for our show, and that was a shout even shy from the lovely Faroe Islands, and she was singing and doing music to a tune of words by my co-host, Joe Hatter. Hi, Hatter. How are you?
Oh, fine. I'm fine. I didn't know I was unmuted.
You were unmuted. And then,
well, I didn't say
also,
anything.
if you go to a team of voices and on allpoetry.com to have a look and find the poems that we are reading tonight in our open poetry show, you will be welcomed by Deborah Lee. Hi, Deb. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very, very well. And then, separately from all of that, we have the great joy of being joined by Rack and Turf. How are you, Rack?
Hey, how's it going, Musketeers?
Hey,
yeah,
Rack.
No, we're good. We're good.
Hi, Cubby.
We're good. So it's been an interesting week. I of course had the great joy of being in Sydney for a couple of days, and I was in Sydney at the same time as both Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. So obviously going to where the important people in the world are. And I was caught by the same storm, delayed the first concert for Taylor Swift. She just sort of put her backup act into the hip pocket and just kept on, you know, going at the same time and playing and finished late. Yeah. I wish that was the same for me at the airport. We had huge delays because the thunderstorms came through for hours at the airport. And so after 4 hours, I finally got myself off the ground. And then we eased our way into Melbourne and I landed there about 10:30 against my scheduled time of about 7:30. And then, much to my disappointment and somewhat anger, we actually, it was usually takes about 20 minutes to get home. From there, it took about 45 because some idiot had decided to grab the bridge and turn four lanes into one. Quite why they did that. I've got no idea, but they did, and they created the world's worst traffic jam at about 11 o'clock at night on a Friday night in Melbourne. So by the time I got home, I'd had about sort of enough, really. I'd been up since 6, so it was a sort of 17-and-a-half-hour day. So I was not a pleasant person to be around. Anyway, that's me in Sydney. That's what it was. I didn't get to see Taylor Swift. Mind you, it had to be organised because those tickets sold out in a flash of time.
Turn on the TV.
It's huge. Absolutely huge, Hatter. You know, like 96,000 people times 3 in Melbourne. I think 80,000 people times 4 in Sydney. Yeah, it's a huge crowd. Yeah. Huge crowds.
Anyway.
So, just huge. And it was, I think it was the English bag, Blink 182, was playing next to Taylor Swift, and they had about 5,000 people or something, and the Blink 182 front man went into the crowd to try and get some more people for his show. Not successfully, by the way. That was the wonderful world of concerts. I think number 3 out of 4 is up and running in Sydney tonight. The weather's a lot better than what it was too, which is helpful. But yes, before the storm came through, I had a board meeting to run, so I was in air-conditioned comfort, but the rest of the world was sweltering in 105 Fahrenheit out there, which was warmish. So we had a late, very warm summer. A late, very warm summer. Anyway, so Hatter, did you bring for us this wondrous piece?
Yes, I did. I think I posted it.
Excellent. There it is. You did. I had to tell The Broken Hearted is the poem. And did you want to read that poem, or did you want me to read it, Hatter?
I like the way you read it. You don't mind.
No practice. I haven't seen it, so you know we'll have to go with. You'll have to go with the fly. I have put a picture of what I'm working on for my art at the minute on the board. I have actually stopped, and I'm not double teaming at the minute. But anyway, let me go to your poem. And okay. As I said, I'm singly focused on poetry at the minute. And this is by Jay Hatter. This is posted an hour ago. This is I Had to Tell the Broken-Hearted. And it goes a little bit like this. When did the easy become so hard and the right was left to rhyme? I had to tell the broken-hearted the heart they found was mine. Watch the words write themselves, acting like they don't want to say. If it all goes unanswered, it will remain that way today. If leaving is the coming of what's about to be, walking to full running, blind to what's in front of me. When did the easy become so hard and the right was left to rhyme? I had to tell the broken-hearted. The heart they found was mine. End poem.
Thank you, Lucy.
I'm with you, Adam. I like the first stanza, and it was worth repeating in a sort of chorus type way. It is a very neat. The right was left to rhyme. It's very, very nice. Yeah. So yeah, nice set of lines there, Hatter. Deb. What did you think of this piece?
Yeah, it was one of the marshmallow rites of the century. It was heartbreaking, Hatter. Wow. I don't even know if I'm going to pick one favorite because each one tugged just a little more.
Put you in just to...
Especially the closing stanza, when did the easy become so hard? Hell of a question. Great share.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know whether to repeat the first one, if it fits at the end of it or not.
No, it's worth repeating, Patter. No, it's worth repeating. And I'd like to welcome Fallon to the show. Hi, Fallon. How are you?
Hello, everybody.
Lovely to see you. Lovely to see you. Now, I am going to go to Rack for a comment on Hatter's piece.
Yeah, you know, broken-hearted seems to be my happy place, believe it or not. But I like how you express yourself. I mean, it's you know, like I say, unfortunately relatable. And you know, when you say the heart they found was mine, it points to the idea of perspective too. When you talk about people and broken hearts, this I don't know. There's that feeling of emptiness, but at the same time, it's like, you know, how you kind of wonder how people don't pick up on it, don't see it themselves, or don't feel it themselves. You know, everyone that's not that way kind of adds to your pain. So that to me is part of the agony of being brokenhearted. It's like, you know, get away from me, all you happy people.
very nice. Thank you, Rack. Now, Bella, have you got a poem that you're going to put on the board for us this fine evening?
I would like to comment on his poem if I could.
No, please be my guest. Grab one. You don't
I was very
right now,
one. But... I was very impressed, Adam, sure. with your work on this because I understand that here it says.
Excellent. I didn't think you heard it, Fallon, but I'm very glad for you to comment on it.
I did. I read it. I was very impressed. For one, what really spoke to me most is if leaving is coming, of what is it about to be, walking to a full running, blind to what's in front of me. That is genius because we are so, and then when you go into here, it talks about the right to the left rhyme. We don't know if we're coming or going. We don't know if it's left or right. We don't know if we're going forwards or backwards. When our heart is broken, we don't want to believe that that's what has happened to us because we have invested so much of ourselves in something. We can't believe that they hadn't invested the same way that we have. And when the truth comes out, boy, does it hurt. And then not only that, we have to eat crow and everybody has to know what happened and we have to go, oh, God, it wasn't what we thought it was. But it's okay because you love the way you're supposed to love. It's not your fault they were shitty people. So I just, you know, toss it up and keep going. But excellent, excellent, right.
And thank you, Fallon. Yeah, sometimes you rush into it when you should have went, what the hell? what the hell did I want?
Okie doke. Well, thank you, Fallon. That's great. And thank you, Hatter. Great little piece to start us. And I'm going to roll into one of mine, Hatter, which is it's not one of those awful, horrible poems. It's just a standard, everyday rhyming piece called Cloud Stutters. And it goes a little bit like this. Cloud stutters in purple then blue, hovering ready for the rains to fall. Yellow butter sands soak through from waves which flutter briefly tall. The storm batters rocks in a squall, their distant clouds hanging dim. Rain spatters as forces darkly pour, then chatter of chocolates by whim. Cliffs of scrub sprayed as skim, energy moving leaves right back. Here unfolds lime green away dim, thunder deep braised by coast track. Still above, a breeze left to tack upon shelter a new pattern too. waves gathered ease off the flak, storm flees inland, dissipating brew. End poem. Deb, what did you think of that little piece of rhyme?
Did you see me?
Unmuted.
Yes.
Okay, I'm just making sure. Before I comment on the poem, cool painting. I like the approach there. And I like the I like the rhyme in your piece, and carrying it down, like the fall, tall, squall. I think you called it trickle, where you're carrying that rhyme down, which reads so beautifully. And I like how you have that serrated edge going. I like to do that sometimes.
Yes.
I think that came out.
Yes,
so great share and great tribute to your painting.
Thank you. Thank you, Deb. You didn't see the painting rack, but it's there's a lot of white there and waves and a beach and a sort of block of sort of rock. But it's that you heard the song. What did you think, Rack?
Oh, I thought it was awesome. And like Deb kind of pointed out, you know, she called it a trickle rhyme, and you know, appropriately, you know, you're talking about clouds and rain, so. The two kind of go hand in hand together, so that's clever by itself, and you know, I like subtle little touches like that too, but you know, clouds can bring on, you know, they could be happy puffy clouds and they could be rain clouds and storm clouds and, you know, harbingers as it were, you know, you're talking about a storm, I think, a little bit, so you know, it kind of describes, I guess, what you got caught in. So you kind of wrote about the moment, I guess, it came out wonderful. I love the rhyme. It's your cadence is always great to listen to.
Thanks Rack. And Fallon, what did you think of the bit of rhyme?
Well, one, your title is amazing to what you just wrote, the cloud stutters, because basically it's about a storm that's off just off the waterfront, and it's brewing, but it never makes it inland. It just about as it gets there, you're already taking shelter, and it just dissipates. I mean, it's just gone. The beauty of it, I mean, and I love how you use chocolates by Wim. You know, I love the fluttering and the briefly tall, everything. It's just, I like the way your little script is. It really brings it to light. And it really brings your poetry, portrait to light as well. This is a stunning piece. I enjoyed it a great deal.
Thank you, Tom. And Hannah,
welcome.
I haven't done, as I said, a horrible, disastrous, reversible poem. This is just a simple, straightforward, forward poem.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
No, you do so well describing what you're seeing. You always have. I'll go right back with Deb said, the storm batters, rocks in a squall. It's, you know, it's a puzzle of words and how you place them and how it rolls off the tongue. We've spoke many times of hard-sounding words, soft-sounding words, depending on the feeling of the poem, and you do it very well.
Yes.
Yeah, this is an example. Good job.
No, thanks, Heather. Thank you, everybody. And we are now running to the piece that Fallon has just sent to me, and I'm going to put up on the board for you to read, Fallon.
Oh, okay.
So bear with me. So
okay.
I'm just finding it. I saw it come through, and here we go. Got it now. And I am going to put it on the board with my now fully functioning hand, which is helpful. don't go and put sort of chemical burning agent on the back of your hand that requires plastic surgery, Fallon. Just a little tip.
Oh, no.
And anyway, onwards and forwards, as they say in the classics, and your poem, Sin's Gift, is up on the board.
This is called Sin's Gift. Harvest Moon sheds an offering to Satan's mistress. Destiny exhales a dense breath of death. Lust gathers like rain storming pores to simple skin. Temptation, cage, teasing, desire, salvation. Hell's midges amongst the sky's curls. Voyeurism bonds within the cloud's gray matter. Devilish beauty curved in silk, shameless and whore red. Softness lays above the hips of a goddess. The fawn without direction burns as draping flames. Seductive strands, scented and blonde, ecstasy's airs, seized to pull. Hunger dilated to devour flesh, his strength binded behind his back. Defiance made to kneel and masculinity becomes submissive. Bray released, he begins to feast in prime.
Oh, there's some talons in this one, fella. You know, I'm hearing sort of, you know, that there's sort of personal experience of some sort of blonde temptress taking some poor man that seems to have, you know, been led into desperate straits and completely submits to the whole thing, and I'm hearing angst. Anyway, I'm going to move on from that, and I'm going to go to Rat. Rat, did you want to make a comment?
You know, it took a mortician a week to get the smile off his face. Oh my goodness. You know, it was sensual. I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot. It had me from the beginning. You're talking about blonde temptress. I was right there with you. I wish I was right there with you. Anyways,
you couldn't handle it.
Probably not. But you know, you go willingly to your death sometimes. And anyways, I enjoyed it. I really did.
Thank you, Rick.
I heard truth. I heard truth in comment. Thank you. And I am now going to Dick.
Phil, this is like, wow. And you know something? I'm looking at the picture. I thought you stopped posing for pictures like this. Just saying. But I like the clever wording that you used too. Devilish beauty curved in silk, hunger dilated to devour flesh with strength binded behind his back, bringing them to their knees. And I like your cage. I love the art you wrote to, and you definitely did it justice.
There you go.
Thank you, Selena. It was a contest for Selena.
There you go. Well done. Thank you, Deb. And Hatter, what did you think of Felon's Priest?
Yeah. You know, it was like a death of a thousand cuts. Each line reads it. And Deb, I bet you don't have that color in your crayon box, whore red. But it was
definitely different.
It was very nice, yeah, nicely put together. Yeah, thank you.
Nicely put together, Felon.
There you go. Thank you, Hatter. Thank you, Hatter. Nicely put together comment. And thank you, Helen. Thank you, Helen, for dropping by with that comment. You going to stick around?
Yeah, I'm going to stick around. I think Deb just read my comment.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah, great comment. Jeepers creepers. Yeah. I'm not even going to say it. Great comment, though. I'm going to leave it at that. And I am going to move on because I need to. I need to move on. And I am going to read the classic poem, I think, by Joyce Kilmer, Deb. Now, interestingly, there's been this little debate on the site about AI, God help us, you know, and it would appear the site is at least trying to look at what happens with the wonderful world of AI, because we have a virtual Kevin AI, and that's been intriguing, Deb. intriguing. I'm not sure any of us have got much out of it, but it's been intriguing nonetheless. And we've had a couple of people actually come to us saying, you know, can we access the group? And because we are working with AI and trying to come up with poems using AI. And I have to admit, I have been pretty sort of unimpressed so far. So we have not let anybody in who is not a real person, which I actually don't think is a bad way to start doing a poetry group, to be honest. I think, you know, one of the things about poetry is it helps to be a real person most of the time. And so anyway, I put all that in because at the end of this, there's an AI comment about this poem. I'm not sure we got a lot out of that. Anyway, this is Joyce Kilmer and Apology, and it goes a little bit like this. For blows on the fort of evil that never shows a breach, for terrible lifelong races to a goal no fool can reach, for reckless leaps into darkness with hands outstretched to a star, there is jubilation in heaven where the great dead poets are. There is joy over disappointment and delight in hopes that were vain. Each poet is glad there was no cure to stop his lonely pain. But nothing keeps a poet in his high-sick mood like unappeasable hunger for unattainable food. So fools are glad of the folly that make them weep and sing. And Keats is thankful for Fanny Braun and Drummond for his king. They know that on flinty sorrow and failure and desire, the steel of their souls was hammered to bring forth the lyric fire. Lord Byron and Shelley and Plunkett, McDonough and Hunt and Pierce, see now why their hatred of tyrants was so insistently fierce. Is freedom only a will-o'-the-wisp to cheat a poet's eye? Be it phantom or fact, it's a noble cause in which to sing and to die. So not for the rainbow taken and the magical white bird snared, the poets sing grateful carols in the place to which they've fared, but for their lifetime's passion, the quest that was fruitless and long, they chorus their loud thanksgiving to the then crowned master of song and poem. Isn't that nice? Lots of poets there. Deb, you chose this one. Did you want to have a quick word about it?
Well, yeah, you know, firstly, I went looking for it because he's on my favorites list. He's from New Jersey, and he has an amazing poem called Trees. And when I came across this one, between knowing that you would enjoy reading it because of his rhyme and all, and the fact that when I got to the bottom, noticed that it had an AI analysis, I was like, okay, this is the one. And it piqued my interest because last night on Strange World Around Us with Hatter, he at length discussed AI. And I was saying about how AI commented on one of my poems, and the last line said, the man shot himself. And the AI said, nice poem, but it would have been nice to know what happened to the guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who survived gunshots?
Well, come on.
Yep. And
but I also
it
like
comes down
stuff in here, and it mentions poets, and it's just a really great poem.
Yes. It's a funky poem. It's got great rhyme and rhythm, and it's got and it's very, very relevant. And having the AI stuff at the end of it was kind of interesting because my observation of AI stuff is that it there's actually more than less. That, you know, AI is not one you want to go to for a pithy comment generally. They're long and detailed and sometimes relevant to what the thing's saying. Rack, what did you think of that little platform?
I really liked it, actually. I the whole time, you know, even though you said, you know, it was by not Joyce. Who's it? Kilmer was the last name. What was his first name?
Good question.
Joyce.
It was.
It was Joyce. Okay. I don't know why I thought it wasn't. Anyways, I was still thinking that you know, in the back of my mind, because you were talking about AI, that an AI could have written it, but not, because, you know,
I guess what they lack is the emotion and the connection to the feelings that was expressed in this. So and then I find it interesting again that there's an AI comment on the bottom. I didn't realize that was what was going on. That AI was released on all poetry now. that we're getting comments from AI.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Can I say yes then? Yes. If Kevin wasn't enough, we now have AI Kevin. Goodness me. That's all I can say.
Maybe we can get AI to comment.
Wait a minute. Is Kevin man in that? Is that Kevin?
Yes, it's
apparently.
It is.
It's called Kevin.
Yeah, apparently.
Oh boy.
And he said he's testing out its commenting skills.
Yes.
It's a comment bot.
Yes. It's a comment by virtual Kevin.
But yet, if you test out AI, they're going to threaten to throw you off AP. Just saying.
Yeah, if you do
so
what?
As always,
if you enter a contest,
what's good enough
if you enter a contest,
what's good enough goose is good enough for the gander. Anyway, very strange, Hatter. Very strange. But yes, we do have an official AI Kevin.
Wow.
So you can get kicked off the site. You can get kicked off the site for posting a poem of AI or entering a contest or whatever.
You get kicked off if you send a poem in that is AI created without saying it's AI created.
Got it.
Yeah, they're going to make a new button. And you know how you put rhyme or whatever in your author's notes to categorize it? Well, there's going to be one for AI. So you can't use it. But if you use it, you got to mark it. And I just think it's all ridiculous. And I don't want to change the subject.
Going to have to be on the preface of every contest. No, you don't know AI.
Yeah, it will. It will, Hatter. Yep, absolutely. So, anyways, that's the world we live in. You know, I thought one Kevin was enough without an AI. Anyway, there you go. I am now changing the subject to my Australian friend, Mr. Dave Muddy, and I am going to read his poem, Ashes of Hope. And it goes a little bit like this. Ashes are all that remain of their hope, burnt to hide bodies as well as their dreams. Life removed in the cruelest of ways, power abused as their dignity is forgotten. Grief fills the air, but is anybody breathing? Cries of the fallen ignored and misheard. The story needs to be told so lives are remembered, pain not dismissed into history's lessons. But felt and acknowledged and taken to souls, transforming complacency so that people unite. Determined to seek justice for every race he has made, maybe never be lazy in speaking the truth. Ashes to ashes, may dust never settle. Burning all pride, may our courage remain. As life discovered, despite the cruelest of days, power carefully placed, not given for comfort. Grief that fills our heart, may we breathe in all their sighs. Cries of the fallen, never silenced or misheard. In poem. It's almost like a prayer. Rack, what did you think of that piece?
Well, that's a very layered piece, I think. I like the idea of the ashes. It brings to mind to me, the phoenix rising from the ashes, ashes of hope. Sometimes you gotta, live through the flames, I guess.
I just quickly the author's note, Rack, because you can't read it, so I'll read it for you. This poem above was written while reflecting on the Jewish people in the Holocaust of World War II. May we always hear the sighs of the persecuted and forgotten. So that was the author's note, which I know you couldn't read, so that's why I said it then.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, that puts it in a slightly different light of what ashes should mean too. So that's definitely a brutal reminder of
Yeah, absolutely. It is quite. It is a reminder. Hatter, did you want to say a few words?
That's very moving. I've been asked many times, why are the Jews hated so much? That's a quote from somebody else.
It's a hard question
to answer. You can go back.
Yeah.
You can go back to Jesus and persecution.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't quite understand it either. I understand the – only by definition do I understand the hate. But, yeah, it's a cruel, dangerous world.
Yeah, look, it's you know, this has happened, unfortunately, a number of times, and it almost is something that it should play on humanity, and it continues to, amount of suffering that was caused during that horrible war and the horrible persecution that occurred, and I'm sure it frames the thinking of many people still today. Deb, did you want to say a few words about this, Tom?
Yeah, you know, the emotion was really powerful that he packed in, and I like the way he worded some of the stuff, like, but felt and acknowledged and taken to souls transforming. And there was something, the cruelest of ways they were ambushed and their dignity is forgotten. Grief fills the air, but as anybody breathing cries of the fallen, ignored and misheard, their story needs to be told. I agree. Keep reminding us, keep reminding everyone, because it's a horrible thing. And it's one of the tragedies of history that we're so it just grabs you, and it's a horror story, but reality.
Yeah.
I'm noticing that it's got no less than a half a dozen poetry awards for it as well. It's easy to see why, because he did a potent job, and I love the title "Ashes of Hope." Because it's those ashes that are being used to keep this sad event alive, or not alive, but in our forethought.
In our memory, yeah, absolutely. Okie doke. Well, thank you, Dave. Thank you for all the comments from everybody. I'm now going to turn to a piece by Titus, and I think Titus is listening, even though it's like 2:30 in the morning in London. So thank you for being with us, Titus. And we will play your piece right now. And thank you for supporting the show and for giving us your sound clip.
An autumn walk, there nothing is asked. To speak of heaven, first impressions of longing, without my belonging, it fits perfectly, like a puzzle, as it will do to emancipate the soul. It was meant for autumn to concoct before our very eyes a living memory, as will our first and last. This is the first and last of what was hoped a conservation piece would carry. Had I between taking turns to respond, we continue to outlive the other, a faith component which inhales as it does both exhale. There is no other field. Autumn, like no other season, all or nothing. To recount the day's fond memories has given us heaped high. Though the past may dwindle to retain such goodness, the breeze through the trees serves as an idle cherished, conserved ideally. The reply does not change the subject. To elaborate further with intrigue not to outwit or outdo, since matters relating to autumn god, there is no end of detail or argument. subconscious scatterings of the mind, it exists for our sakes to make sense of. The obvious splendor autumn gives to believe in what is in fact an oblivious splendor. Such is this wherewithal, that's all I ask.
Okie doke, thank you, Titus, again. And I was really fascinated by the form here. You noted it was an Horatian ode. And so I had to go back and work out what that was, and it's of course comes from the Latin tradition of the Aeolic Ode, and is written with the intention, it says, of creating a calm and contemplative tone. These odes were meant to bring peace to the reader, which I thought was a fascinating thing. So basically you choose the stanza form and the rhyme in order to create the sense of this contemplative discussion and space, and then of course the way you put the poem together had that brilliant music in the background that helped with that as well. So that's the sort of stage that I think you were trying to set. So Deb, what did you think of this piece?
You know, for one thing, the background that he put in there was like a what's the word I want?
Mm, tabernacle.
Choir. Like a chant.
Gregorian chant,
like,
yeah.
Like a chant.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
A chant.
Yeah.
And it definitely set a tone as you listened. So when you read the part about what type of poem it was and that it was meant to elicit, like, you know, a feeling of calm, he definitely worked it out. And the one stanza, autumn like no other, all or nothing, to recount the day's fond memories has given us heaped high. Though the past may dwindle, to retain such goodness, the breeze thought through the trees serves as an idol, cherished and conserved ideally. I love the thought of the breeze and the trees being an idol, because if you sit back and close your eyes and listen to the breeze, it's very tranquil. So that part got me there. And subconscious scattering of mind that exists for our sake. And I also just realized that it, from what it looks like, if I'm not mistaken, the whole poem's written in Latin as well. Talk about showing
as
off.
Well.
I think that this came out excellent. Amazing job with the form, with the feel, with the background. Impressive.
Thank you, Deb. And Hannah, did you want to say a few words about this piece for Titus?
Are you going to have to come back to me?
Oh, no, that's fine, Hannah. No dramas at all. And Rap, what did you think?
Yeah, I'm with Deb too. The background chanting got me from the beginning, and definitely if you're going for calm and contemplative, sets a wonderful tone, and you know his words, you know, take you there. I mean he excels in pulling out forms that, you know, me personally, I've never seen. You know, not that I'm that well traveled or anything, so, you know, it's pretty easy for him to do that to me. But you know, it never fails that he could find something like that just, you know, elevates the art of the writing. You know, simple ABAB gets a little boring after a while, so it's great to hear lined up with such wonderful background music and just you know, contemplative thought. You know, and it definitely puts you in that mind of you know, peace and zen. This is wonderful,
yes.
Titus.
Yeah, really, really beautiful. Really beautiful piece and a lovely a sense and feel to it that you know, only comes if you work very hard to actually get and create that scene. So very well done, and fantastic to have you with us, Titus, and I'm glad that you were able to hear it, even though it's ridiculously early in the morning there. So I am now going to go to a piece by Rack. Rack, so I went and hit the board and grabbed...
Okay.
Hatter? I thought you were...
No, I'm sorry, I somebody
back.
Knocked on the... I heard the poem, and somebody knocked on the door, and I was answering it when you called on me.
Oh,
so
sorry.
I apologize for that.
My apologies.
But that's okay. It's amazing to me. Deborah picks the line that I had already even posted and pasted as a comment on the subconscious scatterings of the mind to exist for our sakes to make sense of. Great line in amongst many of them, but it amazes me. This is the third time in a row you picked the same line I did in the poems.
Oh, there you go.
Thanks, Dab.
We're looking for the same thing. Huh? So well done. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I have gone and grabbed the poem by Rack called Exiled, and I'm going to read it for him. And it goes a little bit like this. I've spilled a river of ink bemoaning my isolation, unable to articulate my heart's devastation. To say I'm broken only scratches the surface because my beating heart serves no purpose. Running from yesterday and afraid of tomorrow, living today laden with sorrow. My chest cracks open and pours out all that remains. Tears are no different than ink. They both leave stains. My days drag on and my nights are stone cold. The clock is winding down and this depression is getting old. Any hope of solace has long since passed. Everything that I value has been trashed. The shattered memories I cling to are the very thing ruining any chance at a new beginning. Such is the paradox for which I've been condemned, tantalizing about a fresh start when I should be preparing for my end. End poem. So, Hatter, what did you think of that piece?
I think this is probably the best one I've read from you, Rack. Because my beating heart serves no purpose. You start off with a pulling at my heart, and then you end fantasizing about a fresh start when I should be preparing for the end. God.
Thanks,
old sucks. Yeah.
Yeah, works. Works. Works, Hatter. Works. It's bloody hard, but it works. Deb, what did you think of Rack's piece?
I'm agreeing as far as the potentness of 20 of your more powerful rights, Rack. Exiled, what a title. Your lines to say I'm broken only scratches the surface because my beating heart serves no purpose. That's a gut punch. It's my word. At the end there, the shattered memories I cling to are the very thing ruining my chance at a new beginning. And that's so sadly true for so many people. They hold on to the past for so long that they lose the future too. Great, right? Sad, powerful.
Thanks, Tim.
Very well done. Love the right. And it was dark, but it was appropriately dark. I thought it was great. I have now got a poem that's been sent in by our good friend of the show, Phil the Poet, and he has sent in a SoundCloud as well. So I'm going to play that right now.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called When a Poet Contemplates. When a poet contemplates on the depths of a raging sea, wondering what to write, imagining what will never be, trying to communicate the seraphic text of torn dreams, gathering moss upon the back of polluted streams, transfixed by the aquamarine ballet that ebbs and flows, while the melting golden sun searches for lost souls, the wind blowing away the cobwebs of disappointment, replacing the loneliness with the overpowering enjoyment. Just a moment while he perfects his creation, diverts the daily problems in the opposite direction, with quill in hand ready to sketch a verbal landscape, highlighting the shadows of a poem that he may create. Distracted by the constant change of life's direction. The poet keeps on writing until you find perfection, pouring out the emotions like the April showers, washing away the debris from his ivory tower. Finding a glimmer of hope to pen another right, lifting up the poetry to ever-increasing sights. A time to finally create a much-needed masterpiece, even though it's as rare as the Golden Fleece. End poem.
Well, you went broader and more philosophical on it this time. I enjoyed it. I think you sort of talked more broadly about poetry and about poet, and I quite enjoyed it. Rack, what did you think of
I love the way he put it together. There's something that he did in the beginning that really was very impressive to me too. I like to try and do what he did. He's talking about the stream, or he's given the image of that tranquility in the water, and then he talks about the melting golden sun, and it makes my mind go straight to the sun as it sets in the water and like it's melting, and it kind of ties the thoughts together in a way that's kind of psychologically, I think, you don't realize that it's tied together, but it really is, and it kind of creeps up on you and ties it, and into the perfection that he's describing. And then, he ends with the Golden Fleece, which, the very quests were written about, that searching for that fleece. So, he put this in together really well. I love how it went. It was a fantastic job, Phil. It's good to hear you.
Thank you, Rick. Great comment. What about yourself, Hannah? What did you think?
It was the struggle of a poet. I mean, I like the way he suggests that perfection's never gained. It's always sought after in the quest for the Golden Fleece. So that was a great way to end it. Was it the with the quill in hand, ready to sketch a verbal landscape, highlighting the shadows of a poem that he may create. This is another good one. Phil never lets us down, man. Gold winner.
Indeed, you're right, Hannah. He's very consistent, and another great poem. Did you want to say a few words about Phil's piece?
Yeah, for one, it's a gold medal winner. Congratulations, Phil. Easy to see why. And I love how this is tied into the poet and poetry from the very first line, when a poet contemplates on the depths of a raging sea, wondering what to write, imagining what will never be. And you think about it, a poet can look at anything and be moved to poetry. Just for a moment while he perfects his creation. I mean, the wording here is incredible. And I like, where was that? At the very last stanza as well, finding a glimmer of hope to pen another right, lifting up the poetry to ever-increasing sight, a time to finally create a much-needed masterpiece, even though it's rare as a golden fleece. I am really impressed. Like I said, I like how it's tied to poetry. And it speaks truths, but it also hints to multiple meanings, which is pretty intricate. So
yes.
I think he did a good job. And congrats again on the gold.
Thanks, Steph. Yeah, great comment. I agree. I think it's a beautiful piece. It's got a front up message, but then it's also got some subtle meanings as well, and cleverly put together. So I am going to read a piece for Lorient Mont. Tenure, and then Deb, I'm going to put your piece on the board for you to read. So I am going to roll with Lorient first, which is a little Scottish ode, which is Warm Barns Lay Unto Lawn Tarns, and it goes a bit like this. Dreary heather with weary weather, spitted glooms within wilted blooms. awoken wolds among broken folds, gales wuthered in swales covered. Ropping dews on sopping ewes, busting kells near rustling fells, woven mosses over overloaded flosses, sickening ferns, a boon prickly ferns. Callow bands among shallow cairns, daring pigrid amongst caring brethren, streaming dams, nigh teeming cams, wrought mulches by sort gulches. Quenched hars over drenched cars, nightly tykes across tightly sykes, homely wings abreast comely ings, cantly hags without brantly crags. Stockened fens till glockened glens, glisky highlands by frisky lowlands, wandering eyes of gandering wise, sundry crakes among wintry flakes. Old England and bold Scotland, winding lands and blinding strands, Swain boars beside Fain moors, worn by beyond lawn tongue. There we go. Hat up. I'll get you to go first. An internal rhymed poem. Very interesting.
Yeah, you know, Lauren, this is a true poet. He gets it. He knows what, he knows how the puzzle works. Everything I've ever read he's into has been great. And he writes old school in the way of ideas and thoughts. His metaphors are light. They're not real heavy, so you're not struggling to follow. But yeah, I'm blown away every time he enters something to read. Very good.
Now, you were getting quieter there, Hatter. I'm not sure if you've gone to another part of the place, but I was really struggling to hear you.
Is that better?
That's much better. Much better.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Rack, what did you think of Lorient's poem?
What did he call it, a Scottish ode?
I called it that, yes. Not sure if he called it that, but I did, yes.
Okay. Yeah, the Scottish Highlands he mentions the line about what was it? Did he say Scottish wives? Whatever he said about the wives, you know, it was a lovely image that he painted to begin with. And it had a wonderful rhyme to it. It had a very calming feeling and a very lovely lilt to it, a lovely cadence.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, agreed. It was the internal rhyme gave it a real sort of sense of motion through the poem, which I thought was really interesting. Deb, what did you think of Lorient's poem?
You know, for one, I thought it was an amazing glossary of words that he used through here, a lot of words that you rarely hear, and between the inner and outer rhyme, and I mean, in some cases, almost a tongue twister. And you read it like, you know, it was no trouble whatsoever. And I don't think that I could have as easily, especially never seeing it before. But I think you did a brilliant job with it all the way through. Great share, thanks.
Yeah, great. Really interesting piece by Lorient, and we always get some really interesting pieces. So, Deb, I've put your piece up on the board now, A Wildlife Condominium on the Tributary.
Yes, okay, thank you. Just a short one. That's a picture that Sky took. Isn't it really awesome? Anyway,
yes, right.
Here we go. Between the greens of tree leaves, Mother Earth's watercourse roam, as cedar water spurts iced tea hues. The root beer tints churn and foam on the raging freshwater torrents in the woods by two rows of homes. Dawn's sun tosses light on the ridge, heating up all the naked hatchlings, snuggling in the treetop nest condo. On the branch that a breeze swings, they stir and twist for a warm meal, tucked 'neath the mama bird's wings. End poem.
That's funky. I like that, Deb. It's, I actually wrote to a poem to a photo that I was taken very close nearby. So, yeah, quite lovely. Rack, what did you think?
It makes me wonder how many worms a month it costs to stay in that condo. That was a really cool write, you know. When you see a bunch of birds together and things like that, you're kind of smashing them into normal, like human personification when you start mentioning condominiums in the same breath. But, you know, they really do. Or are we mirroring them? I guess we're mirroring them in ways that, you know, that we live. But, you know, the beauty of nature around us, it's fascinating to watch and compare and see how alike we are, yet how different we are. I think you did a lovely job describing it, too, like you always do.
Thank you, Rackentor.
Right. And Hannah, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm always amazed at places of vista views or whatever. You can see the rivers below you, and I mean, quite a drop off. It's just the reminds you of the power of water and how it cuts through the landscape. Deb does a good job reflecting this in the words. Don's sun tosses light on the ridge. For example, the naked half skins. See, you put naked in there, so you always essential.
Thank you, Hatter.
You're welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Hatter. Good comment. And I am now with two more. One is by Lawrence67. This is Ain't Too Proud to Beg, The Ongoing Adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and His Homie Friend Alfie. In Ain't Too Proud to Be. Alfie, hey, Nigel. I thought I saw Princess with that alley cat. What's up with that? Nigel, I'm a busy cat. Can't be watching where everyone's at. Alfie, Nigel, you sure? Nigel, I'll give you a flying fart where princesses are doing. Alfie, really? Can I get some? Nigel, Alfie, hell no, you're not supposed to be my homie. My bad. Come on, where are we going, Nigel? I'm going to get my princess back. All right, Nigel, high paw, low paw. There she is. She's with that black cat, and he's singing to her. Black cat rapper. Meow, meow, meow. Meow, meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow. What? Don't look at me. I have nothing to do with this. It's all Nigel and Alfie. Ain't Too Proud to Beg. Yeah. Who? You? Yeah. Temptations. Let's do it, Alfie. Nigel. If I have to sleep on your doorstep all night and day just to keep you from walking away. Let your friends laugh, even if I can stand, because I'm going to keep you any way that I can. Ain't too proud to beg, sweet darling, please don't leave me, girl. Alfie, don't leave him, girl. Ooh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Princess, baby, baby, let's go home, daddy. End poem. Ooh, whoa, whoa. End poem. Deb, The Ongoing Adventures of Nigel and Alfie, what did you think?
You know, sometimes by the time you're done with one of these, I wonder if we had more fun getting to hear them or he had more fun writing them. I can just imagine the stress relief of him sitting down and writing these with the back and forth. And I love the title, Ain't Too Proud to Beg. I actually love a song with the same title. We're going to get my princess back. All right, Nigel. It just... The adventures of Alfie and Nigel are seemingly endless, and I don't know about everybody else, but I'm having fun with them. Thanks, Lawrence.
Yeah, absolutely. Have fun reading them. Hatta, what did you think?
It's good to see somebody having fun writing this. Now, Alfie and Nigel are cats, is that right? They're cats?
Yes, correct.
Okay. I didn't know that on the other ones. But,
I think one is...
No. Yes. So, yeah, no, you're right, Hatter. And it is, you're right, it is good to see somebody having fun, because he is. Clearly. Yeah, absolutely. So, Rack, what did you think?
You know, I like Deb was saying, I think sometimes he writes them going, yeah, I'm going to create this ridiculous situation and see if, you know, someone else is going to read it, you know.
Yeah.
The conversation is the way that he does them. You know, that they play out almost like, you know, I'm on a script to a cartoon for me. Again, their relationship and the whole idea of it is just, you know, very relatable. And it's a little more than just, you know, sketch comedy too. You know, when he talks about being too proud to beg, he does, even though he makes light of it at the same time. So he does it in a very accessible way. So I appreciate it for that, and I appreciate the smile and at least one laugh every time.
Yep, no, true enough. So now I've got one more poem to go. The last poem is going to be by Jenny the Deep. But before I get there, Deb, did you want to talk about what's coming this week on A Theme of Voices?
I sure can. On Monday is my makeup show for Laura Zombie Dart. They did maintenance and shut me out of my show Monday, so that's 10 o'clock Monday night. Any of her art, take it wherever it leads you. Rack, did you want to do your own?
I wasn't doing the show, actually. I didn't have plans of doing it. I didn't even realize somebody had to tell me that I did get a couple of rights for it. I think Sky was going to bring something get them read for me. I'm still not 100% clear on what's happening on Tuesday, but I wasn't
okay.
No problem.
We will get
there. Are sticks on there right now, but we'll skip by there and we'll chat with Sky and see what's up with that. It's all good. And let me see. On the 28th is Storyboards with Sky. She's doing Dungeons and Dragons, The Warlock. I finally finished mine and added it on there. She's got a few on the board. Sure, most people are familiar with Dungeons and Dragons. It was a card game that was popular for quite a few people. And that's, like I said, usually around 9 o'clock.
Yes.
And I believe that my suite will be gone one more time for her family event. So where does that take us? That takes us to Friday the 1st, and that'll be Hatter. So keep an eye out for his next board to go up. I think that's a Hatter music night. I'm not even sure. I got to look at the schedule. And then back to AP on Saturday night.
Back to me. Same bat time, same bat channel. So I have one more poem on the board, which is from Jenny Deep. So I'm going to read that, and then we'll go and for what we're going to be doing for the rest of the night. This is Ameliorating Fearlessly, and it goes a bit like this. Echoes of laughter spread because you're different. You just laugh back at them for being indifferent. Better to be a lone wolf than somebody's sheep, strong and unscathed from narcissistic schemes. Don't lose your authenticity trying to be the same. Seeking approval will only drive yourself insane. Hold your head up high and be true to you. Wave goodbye to the doubters in your rear view. Not everyone will appreciate or like you, but be appreciative towards those that do. A better world is possible by those ameliorating, spreading love and acceptance instead of hating. End poem. I like that. Sort of follows my whole philosophy. Hatter, what did you think of Jenny?
What is ameliorating? What does it mean?
A better world is possible by
those ameliorating.
Yeah, let me give you a proper definition of ameliorating. To make something bad or unsatisfactory better.
Okay. So the optimist. It's an optimist. An optimist, basically.
It's an optimistic poem.
Yes. Yeah, well done. That ending threw me off. It didn't make sense at the ending. Very good.
Thanks for the comment. Rat, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, it's a philosophy I think that a lot of people would benefit from in the sense that, you know, it's to me, it speaks, you know, be proud of who you are and don't try and be something that you're not. To me, you know, if you enter into a relationship or anything and you're trying to pretend to be something that you're not, eventually when it comes out, it's all going to fall apart anyway. So there's no sense, you know, pretending from the beginning, you know, there's a fragileness to, you know, entering into things like that and a sense of dishonesty too. So, you know, be true to yourself and, you know, life will be good. And, you know, that's a great way to be. And you should, you know, never be embarrassed of who you are.
Absolutely. No, great comment. Thank you. And Deb, you're going to finish us off with the last comment for the night.
Yeah, you know, this is two stanzas, but they are so potent and important, and they give such a great message. And I, too, love the end. I wholeheartedly believe that a better world is possible if we all, well, in my words, spread love and respect, but love and acceptance instead of hate. You turn your head and there's hate everywhere, and it grows every day, and it's taken over, and it's so sad, and I think she covered it amazingly in this poem. It's my new favorite by her, I think.
Yeah, very, very well done. Great comment. And so we've actually come around to the end of the program, so my thanks to Deb and to Rack and to Hatter Felon for calling in a little bit earlier. And for all those poets who support the show with their work, including Jenny the Deep and Lawrence and Silver Poet, we always learn stuff from Deb and from Lorient and particularly from Titus with a new form tonight. So. My thanks, and Dave Muddy also, who's become a constant on the show. So my thanks to all those folks for supporting the show. It's always wonderful to be on. Now, I am going to finish the show with a very famous band. And interestingly enough, this band sold more records in 1964 and 65 than the Beatles or the Rolling Stones. They recorded at Abbey Road Studios, Hatter, and they were Australian. They were the Seekers, and this particular album was recorded at Abbey Road Studios in 1964. It's I'll Never Find Another You, and we will see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye, Hatter. Bye, Rack. Bye, Deb.
Night, AP. Bye.
Night. Love and respect. Great show.
Bye, everybody.
Take a look.
Yeah. Probably a good thing.
You ready? Right. Let's make this the one.
I'll be there someday if you must.
everybody. We'll catch back next bat time, same bat station next week. And until then, have a great week. Talk soon. Bye, everybody.
See you later. Bye-bye.